Om Shanti. So this is Brother Ed, and even though some Madhuban Nawasis are trying to convince him that he should stay in Madhuban and serve with his cheerful face, he hasn't agreed yet, so he is going back to Peace Village, Baba's retreat center outside New York. And he's been there since the beginning of Peace Village and has been doing a lot of training. He does self-management leadership and has a lot of tools. So Daddy keeps saying that we need to clean our heart. So Ed's going to give us some yuktis on how to remove those stubborn stains that are still there. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. So I've been asked to share a class this evening on removing stubborn negative sanskars. This is actually my first time that I've ever given a class in Madhuban. It's quite a different experience from what I'm normally accustomed to. I'm normally accustomed to operating in a little more intimate environment, standing up with a magic marker in my hand and a whiteboard, and facilitating workshops. But when I was asked to do this class, I immediately said yes, even before I knew what the subject matter was going to be, because I have found that if I expand my comfort zone, if I move out into territory that's new for me, I have found that the rewards, the fruits that I obtain having to deal with my spiritual growth are enhanced tremendously. And so thank you for the opportunity to expand my comfort zone. I'll be talking a little bit more about comfort zones in my talk this evening, but I'd like to get started with the class. I'd like to begin with a story. It's a story with a happy ending. And it's one of those once upon a time stories. And this is a story of a princess, a fiery dragon, and a prince. And of course, the princess has been locked up by the fiery dragon. And of course, the prince, armed to the teeth, is ready to defend and release the princess, even if it means his own death. But this particular prince happened to have taken a little bit of Raja Yoga as well. And so before he went charging to kill the dragon, he decided to reflect and observe. And as he reflected and observed this dragon, he saw a pattern emerging. Every single day at noontime, coming out of a village on a separate road from which he was going to approach the dragon, this villager came with water and food. And so he asked the dragon, "How is it that you bring water and food to the dragon every day at noontime?" And he said, "Well, the dragon was burning up our town, our village, and we made a deal that if we provide the dragon with food and water every single day, he'll leave us alone and won't burn our village anymore." So this prince asked this person if they wouldn't mind the next time he serves some dinner to the dragon, if he wouldn't mind putting it over on the side of the road just a little bit more. And he did. And the prince came by as the dragon was eating, went up, released the princess from her captivity, and they lived happily ever after. Now, how does this story relate to removing stubborn sanskars? What I'm trying to say through the story is that, yes, we can be like the prince and arm ourselves and just go charging out there to remove these sanskars. It takes a lot of effort. There might be another strategy. And that other strategy might be to create an environment within which these old sanskars cannot survive. In other words, starve them to death. Stop giving them luxurious meals. What do I mean by that? A luxurious meal to an old sanskar you're trying to get rid of might sound like this. Oh, I can't do that. Yeah, but you don't understand. And then using one of the words that Baba really doesn't like us to use, well, sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. Those are luxurious meals for the sanskars because they love to feed off of fear. They love to feed off of ego. And they love to feed off of insecurity. So don't give them those luxurious meals. And Baba tells us how to do that. Baba tells us that child, he tells us time and time again, there's hardly a Murli where Baba doesn't say, child, remain in soul consciousness. Because when I'm in body consciousness, that's where the fear comes from. That's where the ego comes from. That's where the insecurity comes from. And all of the various hundreds more of things that diminish my beauty, diminish my power, and diminish who I really am. As you go into the entrance of the classroom building, you know, right at that main entrance, there's a bulletin board on both sides of it. And what I saw there was something quite interesting. You might want to check it out. It's what your tree of life looks like when you're in body consciousness. And what are all the different variations and branches that stem from it when you are in body consciousness. And then on the other side of the bulletin board, there is what you look like and what's available to you when you are in soul consciousness. When you can, in fact, share God's love with whomever you're in a relationship with, where you have a tremendous amount of self-respect and replacing that insecurity, you have security. And so if you can create that kind of an environment, those sanskars will not be able to survive in that environment. And they'll just wither up and pass away. Does that make sense? I'd like to share with you a little exercise that I do with many of my workshops. And I must have done this exercise at least 1,000 times, probably more. I would hand out some Post-it, you know, those little sticky things, and would go into a little guided commentary. And I'd have them review what it is that they really, really, really want to accomplish. And then I'd ask them, what is it that's keeping you from accomplishing the aim or purpose that you have set up for yourself? And I ask them to put those barriers, one each, on a Post-it. And then we'd break up into small groups. And in those small groups, I had them share those Post-its, simply put them up on a wall. And I asked them to review them and see if there are any kind of natural clusters that would want to form as a result of seeing them all up on the wall. And then I would ask them for their top three barriers or clusters that they found. In the thousands of times that I've done that exercise, one barrier that always, always shows up, irrespective of the group, professional group that I happen to be working with, doesn't make any difference where they're coming from. And that one cluster is fear. Fear of this, fear of that, fear of who knows what. But what that means, if you are aware and awake, what that means is that you're operating from body consciousness. Because if you were in soul consciousness, how can you have fear? It's impossible. It's just not there. And whenever I talk about fear, I always comes to my mind The Wizard of Oz, and that great, big, fearful wizard, until little Toto comes by and takes the curtain and opens it up, and there's this little runt of a character there, apologizing for not being a real good wizard, but telling us that he's really a good person, though. And that's what happens when you pull the curtain from fear. When you pull that curtain from fear and face it, it just shrivels to a very, very manageable position, and you can deal with the fear. And so don't ever let fear stop you. Face it and move through it. Even though you're fearful, move through that fear. Now, there's a difference between fear and stress. I mean, there are times when we're stressed for a reason. Someone's got a gun in front of me, all right? That's stress. But stress and fear are two separate things. Fear is in the mind. Stress is a physiology that takes place naturally with our bodies. But fear is a real killer. Because what fear does is it keeps you in that comfort zone. And if you're in that comfort zone, you actually get smaller and smaller instead of bigger and bigger. When I'm talking about small and big, I'm talking about my spiritual capacity. My capacity to do Baba's service. So, what I'd like to do is to share with you one of my stubborn sanskars. It's a very interesting stubborn sanskar. My professional background was I was a professor of management. I retired in December of 99. What's interesting about this sanskar is that it goes against the grain of being a professor, because one expects professors to write books. And outside of a few workbooks, I have never written a book. And I had this sanskar that said, you can't write a book. And that sanskar was there so often that I began to believe it, that I really couldn't write a book. And then I retired, and it left my consciousness until I started doing, at Peace Village, these workshops on personal development. And people would come to me and say, well, Ed, that was lovely. Where do I get your book? I don't have a book. And so the old sanskar, which was hidden for quite a while, has come back to surface itself. And I said, that's interesting, because now I have to address it. Okay? It doesn't mean that I have to write a book, but it means I have to move through the sanskar that says, you can't write a book. And I know now that I can write a book. Why? Because it won't be me who's writing the book. It'll be Baba who will inspire. It'll be Baba who will really tell me what it is that I should be writing about. And all I am then is the instrument. You see, I'm coming from that position of soul consciousness rather than the old body consciousness. And the minute I do that, there's no question in my mind that I'd be able to write that book. I know how to write. I know how to listen. So what's there to writing the book? You get some paper, a good pen, and you write down whatever it is that you're listening to that Baba would like for me to share with the world. So you see how that was a simple way, a gentle way to deal with an old sanskar, not needing to do battle with it, but rather simply allowing it to slowly wither away. And what was slowly withering away? My fear that I couldn't do something. That insecurity. Interesting, isn't it? So play with it, all right? Play with the power that you have to move from one state of being to another state of being. And just pay attention to what happens when you allow yourself to move from body consciousness into soul consciousness. I mean, if you want to change sanskars, you have to be in the moment. Because it's only in the moment that you have the power to change. Well, if you're not in the moment, then where are you? You're either in the past or you're in the future. The only trouble with being in the future is being created in this moment, and you're missing it. So it's just a waste of time to be out there. So being in the moment is where the power is. And yet, how much time do we really spend in the moment? When I was teaching, I would take attendance, you know, so I'd call off all the names. And then after I finished taking attendance, I would say, okay, how many are here? Raise your hand. Physically, I know they park their bodies, okay? But where are they? I want them to be in the moment. And Baba wants us to be in the moment. But the moment can be a very scary place to be if you don't know why you're in the moment. Because there's a lot going on in that moment. And so you want to be in the moment with an aim. You want to be in the moment with a purpose. And then what you have is a focus. Because without a focus, you're going to be required to sort of respond to all of the energy that's present in the moment. And yet, if you have a focus, you've got that gatekeeper that's keeping things out that is of no relevance to you. And you allow in only that which is beneficial to achieve your aim. And Baba is always out there to help you. He helps you through the universe. He helps you through nature. He helps you through relationships. And he's always out there helping you. It's just you're not always tuned into his FM station, you know? If you're trying to listen to Spanish right now for the translation, but you're not tuned in to the right station, you're not going to hear the translation. And so it is with Baba. We need to be sure that we're tuned in. I'd like to give you a little practical example of that, of how the universe is there to serve you, how Baba is there to serve you through the universe. I would give my students an assignment, and I said, it'll require what you expect. You have to prepare a paper for me at the end of the term. I said, but I think this is going to be a paper like you've never experienced before in your life. I said, step number one, I want you to think of a subject that you would like to know more about, that you always have had an interest in, but never had the time to explore it further. I said, pick that subject. So the motivator was already built in for the student. And then I said, I want you to be sure that you don't cheat. And I said, let me define to you what cheating is. I said, I don't want you to Google. I do not want you to Google the subject. I do not want you to go into the library and research the subject. All I want you to do is every single day, 6 times a day, reaffirm that you want the universe to provide you with some information on that subject. One of my students really took me very, very seriously. He was very interested in learning how to make tiles, you know, these very, very earthy tiles type of thing. He was an introvert, not the kind of person who'd come up and say, "Hi, my name is." Instead, he was very quiet. He was on the elevator one day and he overheard two people talking on the elevator about tiles. He immediately listened in. And the more they talked about tiles, the more he realized that what they were talking about is the manufacture of the kind of tiles, the earthy tiles, that he was interested in. Without even thinking, he spun around, talked to them, and said, shared with them the assignment that he has. And, quote, as luck would have it, they were looking for an intern. And he spent the rest of the semester learning probably a lot more than he ever wanted to learn about earthy tiles. Interesting. It's always there for us. Baba is there for us. So rather than turning to burn these sanskars, instead, enter the moment. Be fully present in that moment with an aim. And where do we get these aims? Every Murli, Baba gives you at least 3, 4, 5, 6 aims for the day. All roads leading to Rome. All the roads are leading to one place. And you know what that is. That one place is our own liberation. That one place is to become Karmateet. That one place is to be an angel. I mean, gosh, if you're an angel, none of these sanskars are going to even dare to poke their little nose in even. It's not their environment. It's not their space. They won't feel comfortable in it. And they won't come around to bother you. But you've got to do your job. You've got to be conscious in that moment. You've got to be in that moment for a purpose. And Baba keeps saying, newness, bring newness to your spiritual development. Because it's through newness that you're going to stay alive, that you're going to be excited. I mean, what's to be excited about? It's the confluence age. It's the only time that you can observe yourself in your own perfection. In the golden age, you'll be perfect. But you won't be observing yourself in your perfection, you'll just be enjoying the fruit of your perfection. So now, and Baba has said this many times, now is really the best time. Because you have the ability to observe yourself in action. And the power to work through Baba and make whatever changes are necessary to continue to remain in that beautiful state of soul consciousness. The newness I selected for myself this time when I was at Madhaban was to focus on Man above, none but one. I mean, if there was ever a place that I could do it, it would be here. Because I don't have my office with me. I don't have the telephone with me. Yeah, I do have internet, but hopefully just to answer some emails. So my challenge that I set up for myself was, can I What's the length of time that I can sustain being man above? Living life with none but one. And while I was here, the first week, I took a 5-day retreat for Nivasis. And one of the books that I received at the end of the retreat was something called The Spiritual Sovereign, Experiments with the Power of Thought. And so I opened the book and I decided to kind of do the experience that the book had suggested I do. And it said to take a reflection and reflect on that and see what happens. You know, be a scientist. And so I did it. And what I reflected on was being Bapsaman. And let me just read to you what it said Bapsaman meant. Having the perspective that Baba has from the home, from eternity. Very interesting. To keep the perspective that Baba has, recognizing fully all of the knowledge having to deal with eternity. And as we know, Baba is here now. And so if Baba is here now, and he's looking at us in this world from a position of eternity, what does that look like? What does that feel like? To be Bapsaman. Understanding what Baba understands. Seeing how Baba sees. Looking through the eyes of Baba at this world. Feeling what Baba feels. Knowing what Baba knows. Having the vision that Baba has. Thinking the way that Baba would think. Explaining the way that Baba would explain. Bapsaman also means experiencing what Baba experiences. Having the sanskars that Baba has. And having the same mission that Baba has. And so it's suggested that I simply take the time to reflect on being Bapsaman. And I did that. It was after lunch. I was up on the outside. And I just started reflecting on it. And as I reflected and was just looking out into the beautiful space of the countryside, it changed. The countryside actually changed. I can't describe it. But it was just different. You know how sometimes you, I don't know if you're familiar with these books where if you look at them, it's a picture of something, but it's not a very lovely picture of something. It's kind of a hazy picture of something. But the more you look at it and the more you allow the eyes to relax, all of a sudden you see a beautiful three-dimensional picture that was always there. But until you reflected on it and relaxed, you couldn't see it. It was a little bit like that. And that was such a powerful, transformational vision, view of what I was looking at, that I was just mesmerized with it. And 3 hours had gone by. You know how Baba and Nismirli says for us to keep in remembrance of him for 8 hours a day minimum? And I would hear it, and I would say, how is that possible? Well, he showed me that morning how it is possible. Because 3 hours went by, and I was totally there with him. And it was effortless. There was no effort at all. And so I'm convinced that my getting rid of my stubborn sanskars is by simply improving the amount of time that I can spend in soul consciousness. Now, tomorrow I'm going back to Peace Village. How is that going to be possible to do that? It's relatively easy here in Madhuban. But when you're back in the thick of it, how do you do it? And I'm reminded of one of my favorite little books, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, where Jonathan Livingston Seagull was very, very interested in his own perfection. He wanted to become perfect. And after many, many, many trials and failures, he finally got it. And he came up with it, and he says, this is it. The answer to perfection is to be there, here, and now. And to Brahmins, what does that mean? The being there is soul consciousness. It's man above, none but one. And bringing that into the fullness and richness and dynamics of the here. Being there, here, and now. Try it. I mean, isn't that really what yoga is, Raja Yoga is really all about? I mean, it's not about sitting atop of Baba's rock, which is a beautiful experience, and coming into contact with Baba that way. But how realistic is it? You've got to come down. You've got to come back into this world. You've got to enter Kali Yuga, because that's where Baba wants us to do service. But he doesn't want to lose his children when they're in Kali Yuga. And so you've got to be there while you're in Kali Yuga doing service. And what we've got to do in order to really fulfill Baba's mission is we've got to take a real good look at our comfort zone. Am I playing it too safe? Am I too centered in my comfort zone? The action is on the perimeters. That's where the dynamics are. That's where the service can take place. To move closer to the boundaries of your comfort zone. And every now and then, stick your big toe outside that comfort zone and see what it feels like. Baba will protect you if you're in his custody. If you're under his umbrella of protection that he keeps telling you to be in. There's a couple more things I'd like to share with you having to deal with sanskars. One of them has to deal with an admission that I have a Madhaban sanskar, very, very deep one. Every morning, I vow to myself not to have for supper those Madhaban French fries. And every night, if you see my plate, it has Madhaban French fries on it. So why is it that I can't break? Why is it that I can't break through that what appears to be rather simple little sanskar? Well, the reality is that it's not my priority to do that. It's really not my priority. But that's another thing you want to take a look at, is if you're wanting to really break through an old sanskar, a stubborn sanskar that's holding you back, if you really want to break through that, you have to be sure that it's on your priority list. Not your wish list, your priority list. I want to tell you another little story having to deal with priorities. This professor came to his class one day with a briefcase, his lunchbox, and an empty jar. And he took the empty jar and he put it on the table. And he said, "The jar's empty." He then went into his briefcase, took out some stones, and he filled the jar up until he couldn't take another stone. And he said to the class, "Is the jar now full?" And they said, "Yeah, of course it is." He went back into his briefcase and he took some pebbles out and he inserted the pebbles into the jar as well. And he said, "Now is it full?" They were getting a little annoyed at this time. Yeah, it's full. Let's get on with it. Went back into his briefcase, took out some sand and poured the sand in. And he said, "Now is it full?" Now, by this time, they're getting grumpy. "Yeah, it's full." Then he went into his lunchbox, took out some chocolate milk, poured that into the jar. And he turned to them and said, "Now it's full." And then he proceeded to tell the meaning of his story, where the rocks represent what you value in life. And the pebbles represent everything that you have to do in order to support that which you value. And the sand represents everything else you do in life. And he said, "Notice, if I put the sand in first, I can't even put in one rock." Priorities. Priorities. Check what your priorities are. Is the day filled with sand? Or are you sure that you have the rocks and the pebbles as a priority of what you do each and every moment of every day? And if you do that, you're well on your way to soul consciousness. You're well on your way to Man above, none but one. But if you don't, you become a human doer instead of a human being. You may have noticed that I have this little, what's actually called a matryoshka doll. I used to call it a babushka doll until someone from Russia, a sister from Russia, said, no, it's not a babushka doll, it's a matryoshka doll. And the difference is babushka is an old lady and matryoshka is a young lady. This is really a piece that I keep pretty much on my desk all the time because it reminds me pretty much of what I have been talking about for the last 50 minutes or so. These dolls, nest of dolls, represent all of the different roles that we are asked to play in the course of our lives. And there are many roles that we have to play. The role of father, the role of mother, the role of brother, sister. What are some of the other roles that one has to play? Yeah, the role of friend. There must be some more roles because I get some more dolls here. What are some more roles we have to play? Yeah, grandmother, okay. Yeah, well, there's some more here, so what else? All right, very good. Very good. A student, yeah, yeah. Baba tells us to always be a student. Very good. Brother or sister, excellent. Okay, we got more here. A child. For the longest time, I used to use this as in my class for a different metaphor, and I used to stop at this littlest doll thinking, there cannot possibly be another doll in here. And I was right. But one day, one of my students said, could I please see that doll? And I handed it to her, and she fiddled with it, and she played with it. And although you cannot see it here, but trust me that inside this little doll is not another doll, but rather a seed. Yeah, that's what I said. Ah. She automatically got a 4-0 for the course. She knew more than the professor did. I had no idea there was a seed in there. And isn't that a beautiful metaphor on being man above, none but one? Here are all of the different roles that I am asked to play while I'm in this body. And if I make sure that this seed is in every one of those roles, wow, there would be no need for me to be giving this lecture on sanskars. Because the only sanskars we would have would be love, self-respect, and all of those beautiful sanskars that we achieve when we are in soul consciousness. In my remaining few minutes, I'd like to cover one more thing having to deal with sanskars. The name of this topic was Removing Stubborn Sanskars. In a way, half of the work is already done if you're trying to remove stubborn sanskars. What I mean by that is you already know what has to be removed. But not all sanskars are that visible. Some sanskars are deeply hidden. And let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Before I went to Peace Village, I was at the Boston Center, but not as a Navasi. I would just come to the Boston Center for Murlis and things like that. And I would do Baba's service, but it wasn't backbreaking by any stretch of the imagination. One of the things that the Boston Center always needed was space for their public programs. Well, being a professor at the university, it was easy for me to get space. So I would always do that, and they would think I'm doing a great service job. But it really only took a phone call in order to do. And then one day, I happened to mention to Baba at Amrit Villa, I said, look, Baba, my kids are all grown up. Although I love what I'm doing at the university, I don't have to work anymore. And so if I can be of any further use or service to you, just know that I'm offering. And then I proceeded to forget that I made the offer. About 4 years later, at Amrit Villa, I get this touching that says, why don't you offer yourself to be a Navasi at Peace Village? And I went, what? Why don't you offer yourself to be a Navasi at Peace Village? I didn't act on it for 24 hours. Went back the next Amrit Villa. I said, Baba, is that what I really heard you say? The answer was clearly yes. Now, I had been living alone, thinking that I'm really an angel, and I'm so close to being Karmati. You know, I mean, any moment now, I'm sure I'll be absolutely perfect. Because you go to the center, but that very little interaction, you see. But I took Baba up on his offer, and I went to Peace Village. My first week there. Now, this is the character who thinks he's Karmati. My first week there, everybody's pushing my buttons. What is going on? All right? Sanskars were emerging that I would have never, ever had the opportunity to address and work with had I not become a Navasi at Peace Village. So, that, to me, means, in another word, is to break out of your comfort zones. Break out of your comfort zones so that you can find those sanskars that need to be worked on, that you don't even know that need to be worked on. And if you stay in the comfort of your comfort zone, you'll never find them. You'll think like I did, hey, I'm next to Karmati, when it was the farthest from the truth. But the opportunity was there to really do some serious work, and it really has changed me. I'd like to end with just a little reading here from this spiritual sovereign on the back side. And it talks about you. It talks about us. The angelic sovereign, the invisible royal, the eternal godlike being of light, the inheritor of spiritual royalty, that is you, Raja Bacha, the child of the King of Light. Om Shanti.